From the Rams studio connected by AT&T, welcome to Between the Horns. It is November 29th, just about 11:20 a.m. Pacific time. I'm here with DeMarco Farr. Our producer Matt is behind the camera. And DeMarco, the Rams are now 8-3 after a 26-20 victory over the New Orleans Saints on Sunday. First time to 8 wins since 2006.
Has it been that long?
It's been that long.
Is that 11 years?
Yeah.
Yeah, or this is the 11th season or 10th?
No, this would be the 11th
season. The 11th. Either way, 10 or 11, that's a long time. But congratulations. Are you doing the math right now?
It's actually 12.
It's 12. Yeah. Okay, 12 years. Even worse. There's a sixth grader that doesn't know the Rams with 8 wins.
Right.
Or something like that.
Well, I'm trying to think. How old was I in 2006?
Let's not get into age because it's going to come to me and we're going to start fighting.
Age ain't nothing but a number, DeMarco.
Around middle school football.
Especially when you're younger. Anyway.
Yes. Yeah. It was middle school for me.
Middle school. Okay. Well, no, it's a tremendous achievement by this group, this coaching staff, the players. They've earned it. They've worked for it. You had to go through New Orleans at home. Drew Brees was not going to give that up easy. Tell me, your heart didn't stop on that last onside kick.
Oh, it did.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because, look, I mean, we've seen onside kicks be recovered before in this season. I mean, think about that San Francisco game, right? Where the defense still had to come out onto the field and seal everything for the victory. So, yeah, that was a big onside kick recovery.
Yeah, I'm just thinking Sean Payton, Drew Brees, they went through this the week before and they actually won the game versus Washington. Mm-hmm. So, here we go again. But, yeah, I mean, great victory for the football team. Talking to some of the guys in the locker room about, you know, that magic number of 8. They were happy. They acknowledged it, which I thought was cool. And then they immediately went to there's more out there for us. So
yes.
I think this is – they have the right mentality and the right mindset, you know, getting your 8th victory.
No, I'd agree. And that's sort of the same impression that I got from talking to guys in the locker room, too. Specifically Roger Saffold, who he's been
good
here the longest. Yeah, right?
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
And that's what I said, you know, you've been here as long as anybody. How do you feel about getting 8 wins? And he said, well, it's nice, but that we have to, he's like, I'm happy. It's stupendous, but we got more.
Yeah.
I've got to go back and get back in the lab and get ready for next week. And so it's just this mentality right now that, yeah, I mean, 8 wins is nice. You have to have 8 to get to 9 is sort of the impression that I've gotten.
I mean, like getting to your 8th win in the last game of the year. I mean, that would be cause for a party. I mean,
right.
Yeah.
And like think about 2015, where you went on the 3-game win streak and then there was that chance to get to 8 wins for the first time since 2006.
We would have partied like rock stars.
Right.
Absolutely.
But then you laid the egg against San Francisco.
Well, let's not bring that up. But
the quarterback is playing this week.
You're up to 8 wins and you still have 5 to go. So there's a lot less left out there. So, yeah, I mean, good job by the team. Great job by the coaching staff. I mean, you can tell through the players that this team is focused. And they're focused with one voice, and that's Sean McVay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you can tell that because the players start to kind of parrot what he says. You know, and I think we've talked about this before, but it's just the fact of the matter is where you see in the post-game speech, if you watch that on the Rams website here, that he says basically, okay, you know, it's a great win, and now we've got to go. He immediately says, and now we've got to go face a divisional opponent in the Arizona Cardinals, and da 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 da. And it's not like they're taking time to, I don't know, revel in the victory too much. Like, obviously, you're going to celebrate a win, as you should. You ought to celebrate every win you get
for 24 hours.
Right. They're only 16. But they're only 16 games, I should say. But there's always this, we're celebrating, but we know we've got to get right back to work because there's more work to do.
Yes, yeah. I mean, and there is. You know what was funny? Right after the New Orleans game on Monday, I do a radio hit for LA Sports Radio in the morning.
Yeah.
And the first thing they want to talk about is Philadelphia.
Right.
You have to respect your opponent. You have Arizona this week.
It's true.
So I said, you want to have some fun? Ask Sean McVay about Philadelphia right now. Go ahead. See how far you get with that. Go ahead. Please lob a Philadelphia question about that right now when he's got Arizona coming up. So, yeah, I mean, keep in focus. Respect your opponent. We all know there's a Titanic matchup down the road. Mm-hmm. But Arizona is up first, and they're looking better.
Right, and that's the other thing that Saffold told me after the game. Look, you've got an Arizona team that you know it's going to be a dogfight. You're going to their place, and he said, they know us as well as we know them. So that makes it all the more intriguing, I guess, for this matchup.
And Blaine Gabbert thinks he can beat you because he's done it.
He's done it.
Yeah.
He's done it twice.
And we've seen Good Case. Good Case, Keenum, beat you in Minnesota.
Uh-huh.
Well, we're seeing good Blaine Gabbert right now, so that's probably going to carry over. And look, they still have some good pieces, so we'll get into that,
yes,
I'm sure.
Yes, absolutely. But let's start with the Rams' defense and the way that they contain. The way they contain Drew Brees in that offense, I thought, was really, really good, especially because if you look at Drew Brees' stats, he basically had 161 yards passing before New Orleans' final drive, where they had to go, you have the wrong game book.
Oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I know.
Why are you calling me out, man? I could have got to it. Anyway,
you could have gotten to it, but I was trying to help.
He loves to call me out.
I do. Because you call me out so often, like, I got to get
if it's for a game book, then that's fine. But anyway, go ahead.
You were just, I was trying to be helpful.
Anyway,
most things you can blame on concussions, too. So you kind of have to. That's the
I blame nothing
that
on
you've
concussions.
Used. You have used.
I have
that
not used concussions.
Excuse.
Yes, you have. Yeah,
I have not used. Well, I can't
roll
remember.
The tape.
I can't remember.
Yeah. Oh, no. Can we? Yeah. If you can, Matt, in post, roll some
never,
tape because I would love
never
to
used
hear you.
The concussion argument or excuse.
Yeah.
And if I did, I can't remember. Anyway, move on.
My point is that the defense, prior to that final drive, and you don't want Drew Brees to just go down the field the way they did. Mm-hmm. Brees had was 6-for-6, 85 yards on that last drive to get him to 246 yards passing with the touchdown pass to Kamara.
Yeah.
But with 227 left in the fourth quarter, mm-hmm. Brees only had 161 yards passing, and I think that speaks to the way the Rams' defense was so effective throughout the entire game.
Special teams and the offense also help the defense, but when you limit Drew Brees to 52 plays, I mean, that is winning defense.
Yes.
And 3 of 13 on third down. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's huge. That means you're getting off the field. Drew Brees and quarterbacks like him can't hurt you from the bench.
Right.
And it's not just defense. I mean, it's important for the defense to get out on third down, but it's also important for the offense, your offense, to stay on the field mm-hmm. and bleed clock. So we talked about this. I mean, you ruled, absolutely dominated in time of possession. Almost 37 minutes. 36 minutes.
Yeah.
37 minutes. 36 minutes. I mean, that's the anatomy of beating elite quarterbacks
mm-hmm.
and building your own elite quarterback at the same time. So, yeah, tremendous effort. I thought the tackling was outstanding. I thought the hitting was even better. Blake Countess, who knew, has become an assassin in the backfield.
Yeah.
Another guy. And this is what I like.
Well, you got the one play that he may or may not get fined for.
Oh, he's going to get fined for that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a hell of a shot.
But
yeah,
other than that.
A couple of big hits, even better tackles, great positioning. I mean, LaMarcus Joyner, John Johnson, mm-hmm. and Blake Countess back there, I mean, played great football against a Saints offense that is geared to score a lot of points. So that running game was tremendous. Alvin Kamara is a superstar.
He is.
I don't think he can sneak up on anybody anymore.
No.
But the job they did after the long run, I thought was great. So I would give the game ball as a whole to the defense. But remember, the defensive film ends with a Saints touchdown. So it tells you what type of game you were actually in and who you were playing against. But I thought they played a tremendous game against the Saints.
One guy you didn't mention in the secondary is Kayvon Webster.
Yeah,
and he had
a tackle.
Great tackle there early in the fourth quarter mm-hmm. that forced them into making a decision that Sean Payton eventually said, okay, I'll take the field goal here. Mm-hmm. But that tackle was huge on the 3-yard line there. And I think he had some other tackles during that game,
sort of in
open field. And I think that kind of shows you what you were missing when he was out in that Vikings game. Because if Webster is playing that solid tackling, the game might be a little bit different.
The tackle was exemplary. The break to get there, to recognize the play, what they were trying to do. It was a modified pick. They tried to run the tight end, I believe, into LaMarcus Joyner to make Kayvon Webster have to bubble around and then make a tackle. But he got there so quick. I mean, he got there before the receiver had a chance to set up.
Mm-hmm.
And that's saying a lot because Drew Brees knows that play. He called that play for a specific reason, to get that guy open. And he got the ball there quickly. Webster was just there faster than they anticipated, and it was a great tackle. A lot of guys made some great open field tackles.
Yeah.
If they don't make those plays, that game is different. So, yeah, I mean, a lot of guys really stepping up and showing up big in key situations, and that is situational football.
Right, and that's what you need. I mean, mm-hmm. Wade Phillips always talks about how you can talk about yards and different things like that, but points are the most important thing that the Rams defense cannot let up. And if you look at it right now, the Rams are seventh in the league. They're giving mm-hmm. up about 18.7 points per game. So they're in the top 10 in that category, and they're in the top 10 in scoring. So that, I think, tells you, basically, you know, you want to say, okay, what's so different with the Rams this year? Mm-hmm. Those are two very quantifiable reasons. You're second in the league in scoring right now, mm-hmm. and you're seventh in the league in scoring defense.
That is awesome. Taking the ball away is huge. Imagine what that would be if you actually held on to the interceptions
you had. The three interceptions that you probably could have had
Yes. I don't even want to say names because I know it's still bothering them. But
21-22,
I mean,
especially.
Wow. It's 22. Not going to get any better than that.
Yeah.
What a look mm-hmm. for Jermaine Johnson. Yeah. So just his reaction after that, I mean, you know.
Oh,
you don't
yeah.
have to tell him. He knows.
Yeah.
It was a great look. It may not be that easy again for the rest of the year.
It probably will not be, but those are plays that you have to make as a defense, especially going against elite quarterbacks, elite teams. And the Rams were
their
good
opportunities.
Enough, right.
Yeah.
the Rams were good enough to win this game, obviously, because they did. And they won. This is the first game they've won when losing the turnover margin, actually, this season. But again, going forward, you want to talk about, okay, nitpick things, where can you improve? And it's fun to nitpick a team at this point because, like, they're good enough to nitpick. That's one of them. You have to be able to make those plays when they come to you.
Well, okay, let's just have some fun with it for a second. And this is why I would be a little harder on the defense because, I mean, those are opportunities. Say Sammy Watkins doesn't recover the onside kick.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Drew Brees is hot.
Mm-hmm.
And you're only up six.
Yeah.
So a touchdown, extra point, beat you.
Yeah, beat you.
Then we go back and we talk about those picks as in they lost the game.
Yeah.
So the same. Result, great. You got the result. But those things on defense, you really need to start corralling when you have an opportunity. Take advantage of every single opportunity. That's like dropping a touchdown in the end zone.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that has a chance to get Brees off the field now, to end the game now,
right.
To really put it in your favor. So this is how you have to make the transition from a really good football team to a great one. Great ones don't miss opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you're starting to trend that way. So you're in position to make plays, just make them.
Right.
Yeah.
And now if the Rams win this game, it means that they will have gone 3-1 in the first three quarters of the season.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't want to look too far ahead. And I'm not really looking ahead. I don't feel like it. That's this week.
Yes.
You know, and 3-1 is about as optimal as it gets aside from 4-0.
If you go 3-1, 3-1, 3-1, I mean, you wind up 12-4.
Exactly.
And you're in the postseason, probably a division champion.
Yes.
I mean, that's a great goal to have.
Mm-hmm.
I remember talking, the first time I heard this was Vermeil about winning quarters. And I didn't know anything about this, about being a pro, winning as a pro. But when he broke it down that way, I mean, we could be no worse than 2-2 per quarter. Well, if you're 3-1, he says you're a division champion, and that bears out more often than not
right.
every single year.
Yeah, it does. And so that's the way the Rams are trending right now,
mm-hmm.
and that, I think, is really good news if mm-hmm. you are a Los Angeles Rams fan. But I do want to
Not shocking if you're in the building. Probably outside.
Yes.
But inside, not shocking.
No.
Yeah, this is what they prepared for.
Right, and it's funny, you know, I'm glad you brought that up, because Jared Goff was talking about this in his post-game presser on Sunday, and basically, he said that the Rams are playing with a lot of confidence right mm-hmm. now, and you know, a lot of things have obviously changed, but inside the building, the culture is one that you feel like you expect to win every week. And I think that winning begets winning, right? You know, does that make sense?
Yes.
Because when you start winning, you're like, all right, this is what we need to do to win. We understand what we need to do to win, and now we just continue to go back to work, because it becomes this thing where it's like, yeah, we won, we're glad we won, but we have something next.
Yeah, and we earn the right to say we're winners. We earn this victory, and you earn it, you know, Wednesday through Saturday preparing.
Right.
So, and then you have some guys that just take over games that are great individual efforts that help you win games. But this has been a total team effort. And like we said, early it was the offense, then the defense came around, then the special teams actually won games for you.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're getting all three phases at the same time.
Right.
So you are building, you're exactly where you need to be at this point in the year.
I agree.
To be a playoff team and beyond.
That's the other thing that Goff said, is that there's a lot of trust, and mm-hmm. that goes along with the confidence. He said, as an offensive unit, we have confidence in the defense, mm-hmm. the defense has confidence in us, and we all have confidence in special teams.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're sort of seeing all of that kind of play out right now, and that's good. It's fun to watch.
Absolutely. I'm sure New Orleans probably has other thoughts about the LA Rams, but so be it. I mean, they're going home with the L. You got the W. Let's move on to the next team.
You either win or you get the Jordan face.
Absolutely.
Yeah. One more thing about this defense, though. You got Donald and Quinn with back-to-back sacks mm-hmm. early in that game, which was really important, I thought, on that first drive because they had gotten a first down. They were sort of starting to move the ball. But then Donald comes in on second down, and he backs Breeze up basically to the original down and distance mm-hmm. there. And then you get another one from Quinn, who comes around the corner and does what he does so well, and that's pop the ball out mm-hmm. on the quarterback as he's trying to cock his arm back.
Yeah.
And the Saints recovered that ball, fortunately for them, but...
The message was sent.
Right.
Yeah.
It was not going to be a comfortable day for Drew Brees.
No, what I did notice, I did notice a change in protection after those two sacks.
Really?
Especially towards Donald.
Mm-hmm.
He caught the slide. You know what the slide is?
When they slide the protection.
When they slide the center towards him.
Yeah.
So it's a basically a rolling double team. They're going to force him back to the inside and try to double him that way, which opens everyone else up. So that's when you start to see more and more edge pressure mm-hmm. when they start to do that with Aaron Donald. And you'll counter that with different sorts of blitzes and pressures that Wade Phillips likes to, you know, implement that way. But, yeah, those first two sacks were huge. It got their attention. It changed protection, changed their game plan a little bit. And it forced them into some things they didn't want to do mm-hmm. protection-wise, which, you know, change things offensively. I mean, what you don't want to do if you're in New Orleans is keep those backs in to protect.
Right.
But you have to.
Sometimes you do.
Now you're going to have to.
The rush that comes at you.
And yeah. I remember a couple of years ago when Robert Quinn, you know, beat New Orleans by himself.
Back in 13.
In 13, when they had to change protection again. This is when they had Jimmy Graham.
Right.
Their best receiver had to stay in and help. Changes a lot when your edge is getting towards your quarterback. So first Donald starts it off, then Quinn finishes it off on that drive. That changes their protection, which helps your defense, probably helps you get off the field on third down.
Well, I think to kind of illustrate how rare that was and why it probably made them change their protection, mm-hmm. that was the first time Drew Brees had gotten sacked on back-to-back plays since 2014.
Mm.
And it was also, I mean, it was also the first time the Rams had gotten back-to-back sacks since 2014 when they did it against Kansas City.
Oh,
so
wow.
That, I think, kind of tells you why, all right, New Orleans says, well, we can't do it like this.
Yeah,
it's not going to work like this.
Right. We can't single up on Donald.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, even if you do, I mean, that guy's going to get a piece of him, but not enough.
Yeah.
And the throw's going to be rushed. That is the benefit of having a guy like Aaron Donald on your football team. You just can't handle him one-on-one, and that's going to open everything else up for everybody.
Right, exactly. Alvin Kamara, though, we saw...
Oh, yeah. Lordy B.
Yeah. You got that reaction. Basically, Sean McVay had that reaction after the game.
The entire Coliseum had that reaction.
Right.
When he did the leap.
Yeah.
That was your home crowd going, wow.
I know.
Yeah, they were being entertained by this guy, and I'm like, that's the other guy.
I know.
We're supposed to boo him, but I get it. It was phenomenal.
He is a really, really good young player, but... What I thought was kind of funny, and I think I don't know why people say this, but they're like, well, why? The tackling on Kamara is so bad. Why are they so bad at tackling? And it's like, you guys got to give a little credit to the opposition here.
Did you hear that voice?
Yeah, it's his Twitter.
That's the Twitter voice?
Yeah, yeah, the Twitter mentioned voice.
Okay, go ahead.
Is that a problem?
I'm just asking, whose voice is that?
It's the Twitter mentions that get on my nerves.
This is what it sounds like as you're reading.
Yeah, I guess so.
Go ahead.
But no, I was. I'm just saying, you got to give credit to the opposition, right?
True.
Because
they get paid too,
right? Not only that, but like he's a rookie. He's been doing this to everybody, and that's why mm-hmm. I had to tweet somebody back. Like, dude, look at the film. Like, mm-hmm. he does this to everyone. Like, this mm-hmm. is not. And if you look at the Rams, especially over the past few weeks, they're not a bad tackling team,
right?
When you have your starters out there, I'll put that caveat in there.
He's special. That yes. long run proved how special he is, and every reception or run after that proved how special he is.
Yeah.
I mean, he's going to be something to you have to reckon with in the future.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that you kept him out of the end zone for as long as you did, I thought was amazing.
Well,
because this guy, you can't tackle him in a phone booth.
You can't.
He's tremendous, and they do a great job of getting him the football. So just getting him down is a victory. So
he's
going to make a lot of people miss. So I would tune out the noise on that if I were you.
Well, I mean, it's sort of my job to look at the noise. You know?
I would tune out the noise. You can look at it, but, I mean, if someone's asking you why the tackling...
That team felt confident in letting Adrian Peterson go.
Yes.
Right.
If someone's bothering you about tackling Alvin Kamara, I would challenge them to do it. Go ahead. You come out here and try to catch this guy in space.
I don't think people would like it if I did that.
I just would say, okay, come on now.
But my response was like, look, I mean, if you watch the film, that like this is not a unique to the Rams thing. Like this is a thing that Alvin Kamara does because he is a special kind of player.
Yes, forcing the matchups they want. And then getting the ball to him early where he has a chance to make a move.
Right.
Yeah, there's not going to be anybody in the National Football League, regardless of accolades or what they're doing now, that's going to be able to tackle him in space one-on-one.
No, not right now.
Right now at all. No.
And what I thought, though, the Rams did a good job of was containing the run game kind of after that one play. Mm-hmm. And I don't really like to do this, the other than that, Mrs. Lincoln, how was the play kind of deal. But you did have Kamara carry it four times for 13 yards after that, or aside mm-hmm. from that one play where he goes down the sideline for 74. And then Mark Ingram had 11 carries for 31 yards. Mm-hmm. So you did
Which
do
I thought
a good
was great.
Job.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Mark Ingram is a good back.
You so took like, care of the not... thunder part of that
right.
backfield, yeah.
You did. And it was basically one run that they popped off, and mm-hmm. then that was kind of it. It was reminded me of the Jacksonville game in that way.
And it was similar. If you had guys stay in their gaps up front, then Alvin Kamara doesn't get out for that long.
Right.
Same thing in Jacksonville. You make one mistake, and away you go. And it's early.
It is.
And then you sew it up after. So, yeah, I mean, I love the way the defense responds to long runs. They don't break when teams break long runs against them, but I wish you would take the field like you already have the momentum.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so you don't have the long runs to pop.
The thing that was, I mean, a bit ironic to me about that 74-yard run is that it came right after they stuffed Mark Ingram for 1 yard.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we talked about this last week, how New Orleans flips running backs basically on every play. They go, all right, Ingram, you get one, then you get one, Kamara, and you get one, Ingram, and you, it's like Oprah, you know?
True. I like it. I see where you're going with that. Yeah, I heard that, the Oprah thing. But I mean, look, if you got a Mark Ingram or a
Matt
bigger back,
like it.
Or a bigger back that you know that's not the change of pace guy. This is the bigger back. You may have a tendency to play those blocks a little slower up front because you have mm-hmm. the ability to come back and make it because mm-hmm. he's not that fast. Well, they'll slip the other back in. He's a change of pace guy. Your same read is too late now.
Yeah.
Now you can't get back out because he's gone. So.
Right.
That's one of those things you take to the bench and go, it's my fault, I understand, it will never happen again, and it didn't for the rest of the game.
Right, and yeah. It was fortunate because the Rams were leading already. They mm-hmm. they showed that they could move the ball, get first downs against the Saints defense, and it happened because you got some good contributions by wide receivers mm-hmm. not named Robert Woods, and that was obviously a big storyline going into this game. That Robert Woods going to be out, your most productive receiver. He's out for probably what McVay has termed a couple weeks. Mm-hmm. You know, whether that's 2-3 weeks, we don't necessarily know.
Right.
But you did get contributions from Kupp, from Watkins, and from Josh Reynolds that mm-hmm. I thought were really key in winning this game.
I was so like happy for Reynolds.
Oh, me too.
And excited for the future with him. And
yeah.
I don't mean like next year. I mean the next five games.
Mm-hmm.
Even when Robert Woods comes back. You got problems if they want to go four wides.
It's
you might not have four corners.
Yeah.
Yeah. Your CB4 better be pretty good because it seems like Josh Reynolds has had enough time to get acclimated with the playbook,
mm-hmm.
and he's got athletic ability. And he's the tallest receiver the Rams have.
He is.
Yeah, and that's a scary proposition. But Sammy Watkins coming through, we knew, look, they were shorthanded at corner. So the mm-hmm. game was going to go to him in certain situations, and I was just going to see if they're going to be able to stop him on slants. He caught an early slant, then he caught another slant,
and
caught
one
for a touchdown.
Yeah,
so no, they weren't going to be able to stop him that day, so which gave Jared Goff more advantages offensively, which opened things up. So that was big. Cooper Kupp, I expect this week in and week out of him. Maybe not 116, but that sort of impact, I expect that out of him every single week. That's why he's been a starter since day one.
Yes.
Yeah.
It is why. And, you know, going back to Watkins, he had four receptions, 82 yards, mm-hmm. two of them on that first drive. But he also had those two defensive pass penalties that he drew
right.
on downfield routes. So Goff was saying after the game how Watkins does so many things that you don't necessarily see. Mm-hmm. And those things that come through, you know, you don't see him in the box score, but there are things that the team notices. And I don't
yeah.
know that this is exactly what he was talking about, but I think it's one of them. And it's one of the reasons why the Rams were able to take advantage of the fact that the New Orleans Saints did not have their top two corners in there.
Right. And look, once Sammy Watkins gets position on you, And the ball's in the air. And this is where it's up to Jared Goff to put the ball in the air in a position where it puts that DB at a critical decision point. Do I go through him to make the play, or do I let him catch it and just tackle him?
Yeah.
And most DBs will try to make a play on the ball.
Of course.
And it's up to the receiver to force the contact, either make the catch or get the penalty. Mm-hmm. So I remember watching Megatron when Calvin Johnson, when he was at his best, when the Rams would take teams up there to play him. Mm-hmm. And it would be so frustrating because we're talking Sean Hill, and I've got respect for Sean Hill as a quarterback, but
we saw Sean Hill enough to know.
We're never going to confuse him with a lead. But it wasn't the pass or the accuracy. It's just when he threw it and where he threw it.
Right.
It just forced DBs to go through Calvin Johnson. Mm-hmm. I'm like, this guy's not that good. But then you go back and think, well, he's always in position.
Yeah.
You've got to make a choice. Go through him or let him catch it. Mm. Sammy presents that same sort of problem for DBs. Get to the point. Jared Goff puts it where it needs to be. And then go up and try to catch it. If not, it's going to be a PI more mm-hmm. often than not. So.
Yeah.
You get those chunk plays, I can care less if he comes down with it, but you get those chunk plays for your offense, it's going to help you.
Exactly. The only one criticism I think you can levy against Watkins in this game, maybe there's more, I don't know, but when he's on the field and then he tries to make the one-handed grab, like he said after the game, I was trying to get on SportsCenter, and then he basically just hands the ball to the New Orleans Saints. Yeah.
Yeah.
Not top 10 instead
well, you got
of top 10. Man.
You accomplished your mission.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just not in the way you wanted.
I get it. Hey, those things happen, man. I mean, he's trying to make a play and they were in the right position, so be it.
Yeah.
Right.
And the defense, I think you got to give credit to them for coming mm-hmm. out basically after that giveaway, and then they forced a three and out.
This is funny. When you're taking the field after an interception as a defender, it depends on what type of pick it is as to how you're going to play. It's weird. I know. I mean, you're going to play as hard
as
you can.
What do you mean as to how you're going to play?
If that's your quarterback's third pick and he threw it right into another guy, like just a bad ball,
yeah.
Oh, you're walking out in shock. Like, oh my God, what are we doing?
Are you in shock or are you just PO'd?
Both.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, what are we doing?
Because if it's the third pick, like, are you really in shock at that point?
I'm defending a madman over here. How many snaps are we going to have to play because of you? But if it's one of these plays where a guy's trying to make a play and it just bounces to them, hey, so be it. We'll get the ball back for you.
Yeah.
Because more often than not, we're going to catch that.
Mm-hmm.
Sammy's going to catch that, and it's a big play for us. So we can defend that.
Yeah.
The ones where he's throwing it to everybody, yeah, that's when it's like, okay, look, man, what what are we doing out here? What's happening?
What is it that you want me
right,
to do?
Right, 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 right.
Yeah. So you can live with that. I want to go back to Cooper Kupp, too, because there was a play that he made, and, you know, they call it toe drag swag now, which I probably shouldn't say, let's be honest.
We can just call it a toe drag.
Yeah.
A tiptoe catch on the sideline.
I'm just going to leave that alone. Go ahead.
All right, yeah. Anyway, but it was second down, and Goff was rolling to his right. I know I'm embarrassing. Goff was rolling to his right, and he hits Cooper Kupp on what turned into an off-schedule play. And I don't think this is a play that has maybe gotten enough attention because mm-hmm. Cooper Kupp was able to really just stay on his tippy toes, drag those toes, and make sure that he got that ball secured before he went out of bounds. And that was a really big play because it set up a third and short mm-hmm. that the Rams then converted. So, again, there's a lot of things that we can talk about, I think, with Cooper Kupp and the way he played in this game. The 53-yard catch down the left sideline, that was really good.
This is what that's what I want to know, because I think Vaccaro lost that in the sun.
He said, I saw a comment from him after the game or when he was in New Orleans or something earlier this week where he said he did lose that in the sun.
And it's happened a couple of times going that direction on that sideline.
Huh.
In that stadium.
Huh.
Yeah, it's happened. I think it happened a couple times last year.
I don't recall last year, to be honest.
I can go all the way back to Lance Kendricks dropping one in the end zone.
Oh.
Looking back that way.
Yeah.
You lose it in the sun, but how did Kupp find it?
He knew it was coming.
He may not be from this planet. If Vaccaro lost it in the sun and you didn't and still caught it, what the heck's going on there?
Well, listen, I mean, the other thing that happened there was Kupp beat Vaccaro off the line.
True.
Very well.
Right. He did. He's ahead. But Vaccaro's got pretty good makeup speed.
Oh, no.
I think if he saw that, like the fly to the football, he closes. But he lost it completely and almost stopped running. Right. But how did Cooper Kupp keep up with it? That's amazing. Yeah, it's amazing. Amazing play.
That was a really good play. But then Josh Reynolds, too. I think you're right that the Rams have a good problem mm-hmm. with him now emerging as another wide receiving target. I remember sitting in the draft room when the Rams selected Josh Reynolds, and Eric Yarbrough, wide receivers coach, was extremely excited about getting him on this team. And he basically said, man, we just got a steal. He kept repeating it as he's like walking around. And he said that, you know, the things that Josh Reynolds showed at Texas A&M as a college player really look like they can translate to the NFL. And so I just remember how excited he was to get, Yarbrough was to get Reynolds in the building. And Reynolds, like a true wide receiver, you know, you're talking to him on the conference call and he's like, yeah, I probably expected to go higher than this, but you know, it's going to be everybody else's problem.
True.
So now I think we're really starting to see all these things kind of come to fruition. And boy, if the Rams can continue to get him involved, that's going to be really fun to watch.
And you have to account for him defensively now because it's on tape.
Yeah.
So imagine when Robert Woods comes back.
Right.
Because I bet you're building a file against the Rams, how to stop the Rams. And at some point before he got hurt, I bet most of that centered around stopping Robert Woods.
Mm-hmm.
So we can't single him up. Let's make sure we have a safety roll over the top to protect. Well, now when you've got Reynolds and Sammy Watkins, you might not be able to double Woods as much, which
and
means
Cooper Kupp, too.
You'll get more production out of him. So,
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that gets me about Reynolds, when you see these guys get on the bus, and we're down there in the hotel, when I can see him behind linemen,
yeah,
I can still see the top of his head behind offensive linemen.
Mm-hmm.
That's good.
Yes. That's what you want.
That's really good.
He's every bit of 6'3".
You can't miss him going down the field if you're Jared Goff, a tall quarterback with a tall receiver. Well, that helps. How many 6-foot corners are out there?
Not that many.
I think the Rams have two of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, so how many are left?
Right.
Yeah, at some point there's going to be a size matchup that you can take advantage
of. What I have liked about Reynolds since he got to the Rams and, you know, seeing him rookie camp and then training camp, he always uses his full body and his full length to get to footballs. You know,
right.
He catches with his hands. He goes up and tries to make catches very well. It's
true.
Not like he's just catching with the body
all the time,
like we've seen from some 6'3" wide receivers.
He does a great job, and he's working on it, snatching with his hands.
Yes.
And it's not just the up. It's not, the up is good. I mean, he's tall and he can go up. That speaks for itself. What I do like is the ones on the low ball. You can throw it low and away, and he can also lay out to get it.
Right.
And he's 6'5" this way, 7 feet going this way if he jumps. If he gets a good enough break on the football, who knows how far and how wide that catch radius is. But there's a lot of things that the Rams are giving you that you have to worry about defensively now.
Yeah. And that just is only going to help them coming up. But speaking of receivers, the Rams threw it a lot in this game.
Mm-hmm.
And 44 passing attempts to effectively 22 rushing attempts. The final stat sheet says 25, but three of those were Goff kneel downs. I think in this particular game, and McVay has said this, that they wanted to throw the football because they felt like that would be the best way of moving the ball, moving the chains, which I understand when you've got a team that has two of its top cornerbacks out.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, that's a lot of throwing to not as much running. What did you think of the sort of run-pass breakdown?
Well, number one, I was interested to see what would happen to this Rams offense if a big piece of their production was taken away. The Saints did a great job taking away the screen game.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you compensate for that? What plays can you come up with to compensate for a defense that's really locking down on screens? And you saw some of that intermediate passing stuff come into play.
Yeah.
I think that's how some of those sideline routes came into that became open because they were doing such a great job watching for those screens. But, yeah, at some point, I mean, defenses will pick and choose. We're just not going to let Todd Gurley beat us today. So
right.
We're going to load the box. We're going to force Jared Goff to throw the ball 40 times. Let's see if he can win. Well, Jared Goff keeps proving that he can.
Mm-hmm.
He's pretty accurate. And when you do get pressure, he's pretty mobile in the pocket.
Mm-hmm.
So he keeps turning back those challenges. At some point, you're going to have to loosen up and worry about Goff, which will open up the running game as well. So it's just that chess match that they're playing. And Sean McVay right now is just one step ahead.
He's been one step ahead throughout the year. And that's why Goff had 354 yards passing, two touchdowns, one interception, which we talked about. Not entirely on the quarterback, but I think we just continue to see Jared Goff kind of grow up, you know, make good decisions, make good accurate throws. Got four sacks. One of those was on the play where he was rolling. I guess it was he evaded the pocket, rolled it to his right, I think, and then he stepped out of bounds basically, I don't know, 2 inches behind where the line of scrimmage was, so that's a sack. So Effectively, yeah. I know defensive guy.
Oh my God, did I politic for those? Oh yeah, they all count. Anyway, go ahead.
How many?
I'm not
sacks
even going to tell you.
No, I want to know how many sacks do you think you got on guys running out of bounds in front of you?
Oh, I can two.
Okay.
Yeah. Two,
two.
I wanted
fine.
To make sure you have to make sure you get those because your teammates will take them from you. Yeah, I mean, when you see a quarterback angling out of bounds and you know what it is, it's a race to get there because the first guy that's out of bounds with him gets the sack. Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's
you'll see
fun.
Guys turn on the Jets for that, man. Okay. Oh yeah, there's money involved.
Yeah. Oh no, absolutely. Yeah, every sack, like every interception, like these are millions of dollars for defensive players.
If I set a bag of money at the end of the hallway and said, you know, winner take all. How fast do you think you're running?
I'm running pretty fast.
Same thing with a quarterback. That's money. Go get him. Right? Yeah.
But because the Rams threw it a lot, you only saw 17 carries for Todd Gurley. And in a game like this, I actually thought Todd Gurley would be more involved in the run game. But as you're looking at the stat sheet, where are you going with it?
Well, I mean, 17 rush attempts for Todd. There were 29 total.
Right.
Well, minus three.
Yeah, so 22 total.
Excuse me. 22. Well, I mean, look, Tavon had I thought he had a fantastic day.
You thought he had a fantastic day.
I do. I think the fact that he's out there and the decoy that he presents, even when he gets the football on end arounds, you still have to defend that. And he got around a few times.
He
really makes those defensive ends hold their place for a half second.
If you look, I mean, he had 5 rushes for 17 yards. He had a 10-yard long on a carry. He also took some negative plays. And he also had 3 receptions for minus 1 yard. But so you're basically what you're saying, 8 receptions, 16 yards is not representative.
No.
Excuse me, 8 touches, 16 yards is not representative of what he was doing as a whole.
Correct. And let's be honest, the Rams didn't capitalize with the run game.
No.
With Tavon being out there. Because the counterpunch to Tavon is Todd Gurley on the cutback.
Yes.
So some of that did not happen. Okay. Now, play calling wise, whatever the situation was, or whatever New Orleans was giving the offense, that change plays into pass plays. We just talked about that. But I think that some of these rush attempts could have gone to Todd and not just the end-around stuff. The true running back in the dot behind the quarterback, let's take it between the tackles, some of those could have been Todd's carries as well.
Yes.
Yeah, so
that was my impression, too.
Right. So I think there could have been more rush attempts for him. They split it up for whatever reason. But I think Tavon's ability and his approach to the offense and what he does to a defense, I think they actually got what they wanted. They just didn't capitalize on it play-wise.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I know you talked to Sean McVay during the coach's show about sort of that double pass at the end of the game. What was his thinking on that?
Well, you're up 10 at that moment, right? So that's a drive to where you're trying to ice the game. You've got a chance to hit them big. If you go up 17, I wouldn't say the game's over, but it's closer to being over.
Yes.
It puts more pressure on Drew Brees. It makes them one-dimensional when you're down by 17 points. You might be able to take away maybe a Mark Ingram. He's out of the offense now.
Yes.
Kamara is always going to be in your offense, but maybe you have a chance to make them a little more one-dimensional. So in that situation, if you can hit them trying to be aggressive with what they think is a receiver sweep or whatever, they may attack harder and you'll get a guy open deep. It just, they didn't buy it. They're a smarter defense than the play called.
Hmm.
So, I mean, smart play by Cooper Kupp to ground the football.
Yeah.
Maybe you'd like to see him eat the football, keep the clock moving, because the clock is your friend.
It is your friend.
At that time. But it's a big play. You're trying to hit them big for a big play. It did not happen. Give them credit for defending it.
I'll tell you this. One thing, the thing it really reminded me of was the Willie Snead throw last year.
You thought it was a revenge play?
I didn't think it was necessarily a revenge play, but I thought that could be in the back of somebody's mind. Even though McVay wasn't here, like none of this coaching staff basically was there.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't know.
I got you. Right. I mean, it's one of those, look, as a defense, if you're not prepared for it or if you're just defending things by rote, you're going to get hit by it.
Yeah.
So the way they were attacking screens and perimeter runs, it's a natural progression to try that play. Mm-hmm. They were just a little smarter on it than the Rams were running the play.
Yeah, yeah. That's pretty apparent. So one thing for an injury update, do you know Connor Barwin probably going to be out for a couple weeks?
Yes, broken arm.
Yes, yeah. Which is unfortunate because of what he is to this defense. I mean, he's another guy. We talked about Robert Woods a lot last week as being one of the big leaders of the unit, leader of the wide receiver room. Well, Connor Barwin, you've got another veteran guy who's been around the block. He's been to the postseason, knows what these things are all about. And now you're not going to have him in there for a couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. What it does present, though, is an opportunity for Samson Abicom to get on the field and to show what he can do a little bit more.
Yeah, and that could affect, you know, a few things because, you know, Abicom is a contributor on special teams. So if he has to start and play max numbers on defense, you might have to lose him on special teams.
Or, right. McVay did bring that up earlier this week.
Or you're a rookie, man. You're going to have to do double duty. It sucks for you, but that's just the way it is. Yeah. No, that's just the way it is.
Right.
You might have to play special teams and play defense at the same time. So the thing I like about Connor Barwin is he coaches regardless. Mm-hmm. In pads or out. If he's in the game or out of the game, he's always helping the young guys get ready. So Abicom is going to have the benefit of great position coaching and a great player coach right behind him.
Right.
That's going to help him get through. But even with that, the guy's got some ability to get to the passer.
He does.
Yeah, I mean, he's come along really, really well. And we talked about this. These young guys getting reps early, it's only going to help you when come December.
Right.
When your veterans need, you know, some time off or they get hurt. I don't think the defense took a backward step once they lost Connor Barwin.
And I don't really either.
That speaks to Wade Phillips and the depth and just guys being ready for the moment.
Right, exactly. Abicom is interesting because he's another guy out of Eastern Washington. Mm-hmm. So he's another guy making that FCS to the NFL jump. And I think he's done a nice job of it. Particularly, you look at the sack that he had. I think it shows that he's got some raw talent and that he can use that raw talent to get to the quarterback. But there's also some stuff that I think can still be refined with him. Do you see that?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, that's everybody. Everybody's looking to get better. But the one thing I do know, and the way they're treating him and the way they're coaching him is they give him a set of options per play. Mm-hmm. This is what can hurt you. This is what can't. When you see this, go.
Right.
And that's what he's doing for the most part. So let Wade Phillips put you in position to be successful and don't do anything outside of that.
Right.
And you'll be fine in the defense. At some point, sure, it's going to come down to you to make a play. It's obvious passing down and you're going against one of their better tackles and you're going to have to win. So let's see how you do.
Yeah.
And from what we've seen so far, I don't think he blinks or shies away from anybody in a pass rush.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's being too young to know exactly what you're doing. You don't even know the guy you're beating. You don't even know you're too young to beat that guy right now. Good. Keep doing it. Yeah.
Did you feel that when you were
absolutely.
Like a young guy in the league?
Man, I'm just trying to keep a job, you know?
Aren't we all?
And I remember Sean Gilbert pulls me. This is the guy, my veteran, my mentor. Do you know who you just beat for a sack? No, who? 4-time All-Pro, but don't worry about it. You're good. Just keep playing.
Yeah.
I'm like, really?
And then you keep going, and then you do what you got to do.
Yeah, yeah.
I know we're not supposed to look too far ahead. Oh, actually, more injury updates before we get to that. Lance Dunbar, running back, and also Nickell Robey-Coleman are expected to get back to practice this week,
awesome.
Which is good. Yes, definitely good. You need those guys for the stretch run.
People keep asking me, what is Lance Dunbar's role on the football team?
Yeah.
If he's healthy, see Alvin Kamara.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing.
Yeah.
Same situation, same problem.
Yeah.
Maybe not the same wiggle, but same matchup problem out of the backfield. You cover him with the wrong guy, gone.
Boom. Yeah, and I'll say this, though. I think Todd Gurley has done maybe a better job than anybody would have anticipated out of the backfield.
Yes.
This year.
Absolutely. You know? I mean, he's great on screens. He's great with the swing outs. He's a running back that can also catch.
Yes.
Dunbar is a true third down back.
Right.
When he's in the game, it's passing. And if he's not protecting, he's out in the route.
Right.
So it depends on what guy is over top of him. It will determine his success out there. So, yeah, having him back in the offense is only going to help.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Before we move on to what I was going to talk about, I do want to say that Todd Gurley right now, second in the league with 1,344 yards from scrimmage. He's behind only Le'Veon Bell. And he still leads the league with 11 total touchdowns. So again, like that's what I mean when I'm saying, like, I think he's better out of the backfield than we probably could have anticipated, because he is third in the league right now with 865 yards rushing, but he also has set a new career high with 479 yards receiving.
Yes.
And we've still got five games to
go. This is the brilliance of the higher-ups and when you talk about winning football, because you want to make sure that when you do qualify for the postseason, you want to make sure he is fresh and ready to go.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's gonna be a task. He's still, I mean, he's in his third season, right. So he's got fresh-ish legs.
Yes.
But still, I mean, the beating that he takes, you know, consistently game in and game out, that's why you want Lance Dunbar back. That's why
I'm not
Brown.
Upset with 17 carries.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. And you still get the win.
And McVay brought that up, too. Yeah, you know, there's sometimes where you still want, Todd Gurley's going to get a high number of snaps.
Yeah.
So, and he, especially because Malcolm Brown, Lance Dunbar were out, he was in there on a lot of third downs. So that's why you kind of, when you're taking that kind of beating, you kind of want to balance things out a little bit.
Remember, Jared Goff is the first pick in the draft. Mm-hmm. I don't mind leaning on him for 44 pass attempts. That's why I drafted him.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So the one thing that I've said that I don't want to look too far ahead, but folks have talked about this week, is that the Rams-Eagles game next week is not going to be flexed to Sunday Night Football, which, I mean, some people are disappointed by that. It's interesting, I think, when you have Sunday Night Football on the West Coast, because it still starts at 5:25, so it's not like it's that late anyway. But I just want to point it out that that game, we know now that that game is not going to be flexed. There's still the opportunity for the Rams to play on Sunday Night Football. It would be the following week, Rams at Seattle Seahawks, but that week they also have Patriots and Steelers.
Yes.
Who are two very good teams.
I can only talk about my experience. Playing in primetime is a blessing and it's an honor.
Yeah.
It's also rough.
Why is it rough?
It's a long time to wait to play ball, man.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
If you can keep it close to what you're used to, great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. If you complete this year, if you complete a magical run, then next year you won't have to worry about not playing on primetime.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to miss the schedule.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So speaking of an NFC East team, I do want to mention the fact that the Giants have now turned to Geno Smith as their starting quarterback. How surprised were you by that?
Manning overboard. Wow, it's not his fault. I mean, that's a shame that it would fall on Eli.
Right?
Yeah, it's not all his fault.
Well, I mean, we talked about this a couple weeks ago, and I remember saying that I thought it would be a shame to take that when they're starting to talk about taking Eli out. You know, you've got a guy who has been a model franchise quarterback for that franchise,
which is every Sunday.
Right.
Yeah.
210 game starting streak, and now it's over because ?
Well, I wish I can say I don't get the Eli Manning hate. I do. I see it.
Yeah.
But just talking this year, how can you watch the Giants on offense and say Eli's the problem?
I saw on a stat that said that the Giants have the highest number of drops and the highest drop percentage in the league.
So when I do hear people start to badmouth Eli Manning, I just tune that out and just kind of walk away from the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He might have beat your football team or something, because it's not fair.
Right.
Yeah, that criticism isn't fair, especially this year.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All right, so let's turn it to this week, though, for the Los Angeles Rams, and they are facing the Arizona Cardinals. The Cardinals are now 5-6. They had a pretty decent win over the Jacksonville Jaguars last week. Yeah, exactly. Hey, you only have six losses. Like, they're still... You know, you get the graphic, like, in the hunt.
Yes.
When they show the playoff picture.
Yeah, yeah.
You're 5-6. You're still in the hunt.
You ever watch slasher films? You know what slasher films are.
Like, films where just a guy goes around killing people.
Like Michael Myers, Jason Voorhees.
No, the answer is no. I don't really watch those.
Halloween, Friday the 13th. Okay, well, in every horror movie, you think the killer is dead, and then you turn around and he's gone. That's the Arizona Cardinals. You thought they were dead after London, and here they are again, and they're playing better football.
They are.
Than what you saw in London. So, yeah, I mean, Sean McVay, he coached us out of using the word trap. There are no trap games with their mentality, because it's one week at a time. Mm-hmm. I get that. But for us, this is...
That's a trap.
This is the very definition of a trap game. Yeah, because everyone's already talking about Philadelphia. You have Arizona. So, I mean, that's going to filter into the locker room whether you want to or not.
You think so?
Well, look. Everybody has smartphones. Everybody turns on the internet.
Yeah.
I mean, it's going to filter
especially
in.
Especially with everybody talking about the game that, like, I just did, yeah. bringing up the game that's not going to be flexed.
Right. Now, everything goes out the window when you, as a player, as a coaching staff, sit down and watch Arizona. You have nothing but respect for them. But some of your attention is going to go to Philly because that's where it is in the media.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's something you're going to have to guard against and coach against. As a Rams staff member and a player right now.
Okay, so thinking about your playing time then, what was the most effective way of doing that? I mean, like, when you're 13-3 and you're going, or the season where you're 13-3, and obviously you're not 13-3 until the end of the year, but how do you avoid those kinds of things?
Make sure that you show the players, or being shown how close you were to losing a football game.
Hmm.
Yeah, I mean, show all the bad stuff you did.
Yeah.
If you're feeling good about yourself, if you're patting yourself on the back, well, look at this, 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 and this.
Right.
It'll refocus you in a heartbeat. Yeah, we were this close to losing this last game.
And you can say that because you had, you know, Drew Brees go down the field in a very quick amount of time, and you were an onside kick away from having to send the defense out again.
And then put on a bunch of tapes of Arizona with their 5-6 record and say, hey, look, they're this close to being 7 and whatever,
mm-hmm.
you know, this close to being pretty good. So you can't overlook anybody at this point. We're good. We're 8 wins in, but we're not there yet, guys.
Right.
So there's ways to refocus your football team. But once you leave the building, I mean, you're going to be hit with a bunch of distracting questions about a game that you're not ready to play yet.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's all about Arizona. Huh. It needs to be all about Arizona.
Right. I wonder if we'll hear some players this week say, I mean, that's nice, but we're about Arizona this week.
I'm sure you will.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure you'll hear something like, we're on to Arizona. It's all about Fitzgerald.
Yeah.
It's all about Blaine Gabbert. You'll hear, like, effusive praise for their coaching staff. You'll hear a lot of that stuff because that's what's being taught to them, which means this team is headed in the right direction.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What do you see on film that's different from Arizona this time around?
Blaine Gabbert looks really good. He does.
Yeah.
He looks really good. I heard Sean McVay say about Blaine Gabbert, he's a natural thrower of the football. And then you go back and watch. I mean, some of the passes that he lets go, it looks effortless.
It does.
And it gets there in a blink. And he's improved his accuracy. Maybe it's the guys he's playing with. Maybe it's he's had time to learn the offense and become acclimated. But those receivers look different around him. And they can still run the football. Adrian Peterson is still there.
Mm-hmm.
So this offense presents some issues for you all over the field.
One guy that stood out to me in that Jacksonville game is their undrafted tight end out of Texas A&M, Ricky Seals-Jones. And I the first thing I did, first thing I usually do over the course of the week is I get the game book from the next opponent's previous week. Mm-hmm. And so, like, DeMarco, you can even see this. It's in front of you. Their leading receiver is Ricky Seals-Jones. And, like, you're looking at the wrong page.
No, I'm looking at numbers.
Oh.
But go ahead, yeah.
But the thing I'm pointing out to you, like,
yes.
I literally wrote, who?
Who are you?
Yes.
Right, yeah.
Because I've never heard of this guy. But, like, you know, you watch the film and you see that he is a good, productive tight end, and mm-hmm. Blaine Gabbert really kind of seems to trust him, and it's because he's making the catches, he's making plays, and he's getting into the end zone.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, look, I was taught this a long time ago, and it bears out for the most part. Tight ends are always open.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I mean, for the most part, they are. They're the dual threat, block and then receive at the same time. And, you know, quarterbacks who struggle with accuracy, usually they lean on tight ends.
It seems like Blaine Gabbert has been doing that.
It's the first guy that you can find in a blink to mm-hmm. get the ball to. And usually he's in man coverage. So it does not shock me at all. And then you'll start to work in passes down the field as you get more confidence. But, you know, early in games, I would expect him to lean on tight ends and running backs out of the backfield.
No.
When quarterbacks are taught not to make mistakes with the football, those are usually the first guys they find.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So for Seals-Jones, 3 touchdowns in the last 2 games. So definitely somebody that the Rams are going to have to look out for. But Blaine Gabbert has been a Ram killer over the last few years. I mean, if we think about it,
mm-hmm.
you know, thinking about that, the game we kind of brought up earlier mm-hmm. in 2015, the Rams had a chance to go 8-8. They go into Santa Clara.
Napa Valley killed the Rams then.
Well, yes.
Vineyard. No, I'm just kidding.
Yes,
anyway.
The vineyard probably did. But
yeah.
In that game, I mean, Blaine Gabbert has 354 yards passing. He throws a touchdown. The Niners mm-hmm. win that game in overtime. And then last year, you saw Blaine Gabbert, I think, do more things with his feet. He had 9 carries for 43 yards while throwing for 170 yards and a touchdown
yeah.
in the Niners' 28-0 victory on Monday Night Football.
Well, I mean, did you see Blaine Gabbert in college in that offense?
Not really.
M-I-Z. I
mean, at some point.
No, get that out of here.
At some point, he ran the football. I mean, so Blaine Gabbert rushing the football doesn't surprise me.
Right.
He's a pretty good athlete. What you wanted in the past was to force Blaine Gabbert to throw.
Right.
To win. And more often than not, you beat him. But, you know, at this stage in his career, he's getting better. And he's got another opportunity, probably with, you know, a better supporting cast around him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, right situation, right time, guys start to look different. He's starting to look different.
Yeah, and you know what? Bruce Arians has said that he would be comfortable going into 2018 with Gabbert as a starting quarterback. So,
why wouldn't you?
Yeah, at this point. Chandler Jones, though, you know, outside linebacker, came over from the Patriots for Arizona. He's been there for the last couple years, and he just had an absolute game wrecker game last week. I mean, you look at it, he had 6 total tackles, 5 tackles for loss, 2 sacks, and a pass defense. It was ridiculous to see what he was doing.
What do we say about guys like him when you watch him play? He's not quick, he's not fast, he's just all of a sudden. Mm-hmm. Like, all of a sudden, he's over here. All of a sudden, he's on top of your quarterback. Yeah, I mean, he's very, very good at what he does. And I think he has a higher football IQ than most people give him credit for.
Hmm.
Because you may think you have him, but he's actually setting you up.
Yeah.
Yeah. He'll give you the wounded fish or the dead leg, and then all
the
of a sudden...
wounded fish or the dead leg?
Yeah, wounded fish. You know, wounded fish, like he'll just flop around like you have him,
uh-huh.
and then slide behind you and make a play.
Uh-huh.
Or give you a dead leg. That's the worst looking inside move ever.
The dead leg.
It's like your leg is dead. It's ugly. Right.
You'd have to show it to me. I don't really understand.
Well, it's
what
just
you mean,
no tackle in the world is going to buy that.
Okay.
But you have to honor it because he's actually moving inside, but he's setting you up for an outside move.
Okay.
And he gets it every single time or any time he wants. Yeah, he's a matchup problem.
He's on his way to setting a new career high in sacks this year. He's already got 12, had 11 last year, 12 and a half, his highest season total when he went to the Pro Bowl with the New England Patriots. But yeah, he got a sack earlier this year against the Rams when we saw him in London. So,
and maybe the best gunfighter in the league. When I mean gunfighter is inside when you're fighting with hands.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what they call a gunfight. Whoever gets their hands up first is going to win. That's what we used to do, call gunfight.
Never heard that.
You never heard gunfight? Oh.
I didn't play defense.
When you're getting your
it makes sense.
You're shooting your hands to the
breastplate. You got to get the quick draw.
He is faster and better than most ends and most tackles he's playing against.
Mm-hmm.
It's really hard to get to that breastplate on him. He makes it very difficult to get a clean shot. Like an Alvin Kamara out of the backfield. He makes it difficult to get a clean shot.
Yeah.
Chandler Jones makes it almost impossible to get a clean shot on this chest,
mm-hmm.
which means you just can't knock him off his rush.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's going to be one of the big keys for the Rams. Can they stop Chandler Jones? Okay, so wacky question time.
Wacky question.
Yeah. First,
and by the way, and remember, the tape that's going out versus New Orleans, Andrew Whitworth was beaten inside.
He was.
Cameron Jordan had a great day.
He did.
So
that's a good point.
And that's the thing that all defensive linemen feel and follow. When we see good days against, we feel we're going to have a good day. So he's going to be sky high confidence wise.
That's going to be it's going to be an interesting matchup, definitely between Whitworth and Jones, and then also Havenstein and Jones because they do move Jones around.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, you think there's an opportunity to make a play?
Yeah.
So you're coming in the game already confident. It's going to be up to you to take it out of them during the game, which is the exact opposite of what it's been like for Whitworth this year.
Right. No. Yeah.
Guys have gone in knowing they're not going to win.
Mm-hmm.
Now they think they can.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right. So, the wacky question. First, how was your Thanksgiving? Did you have a good Thanksgiving?
Outstanding.
That's not the wacky question. I'm sorry.
Oh,
I messed that up.
Great Thanksgiving. How about yours, Miles?
Are you reading question marks
on
the teleprompter?
No, I'm wondering where you're going with the wacky question.
I'm Ron Burgundy.
You said wacky question, and then how was my
Thanksgiving? I know.
Okay.
I messed up the delivery.
Okay.
All right? So my Thanksgiving was good. I had a very nice time on Thanksgiving.
Okay. Now wacky question.
Yes.
Okay.
So, Christmas music.
Christmas music.
Yes or no? Are you a fan or not a fan?
Big fan.
Yeah?
Yes.
What's your favorite Christmas song?
What's that? Oh, the weather outside is frightful.
Let it snow, let it snow.
I love that song.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Well, we're not going to have frightful weather or inside being delightful.
If you're a diehard fan, that song is just etched in your brain forever.
Matt, do you or do you not like Christmas music?
I do, but it depends on, like, it takes me back, you know, to, like, being comfortable at home and, you know, with family and stuff. Yeah. So I like it, but I can't start listening to it until we get closer to Christmas.
Really?
Because it'll burn me out.
See, I like to start listening to it basically day after Thanksgiving, or almost on the way home from Thanksgiving dinner. Yeah, like, that's when I feel like the Christmas season. So, like, I got home from Thanksgiving dinner, and I turned on Andy Williams' It's the Most Wonderful Time of the Year. Like,
it's
I got to crank it, Andy.
Wonderful time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a great song. You know, you get the horns.
Wait,
the
you can get burned out on Christmas?
Not Christmas. I mean, it's just any song in general. If I start listening to it, if I listen to it for a month straight, I'm going to be burned out on it.
I'll never get tired of Christmas music, ever.
I think it's certainly acceptable for everybody in society.
Yeah.
It's just a personal way that I choose to live my... I have a Christmas tree I'm going to put up. Yeah. It's just the music is just going to be separate.
Okay.
Okay.
Oh, that was the wacky question?
Yeah, that was about it.
Okay.
I like that.
I was worried about nothing.
No, yeah, probably.
Okay.
So I like that. I like It's the Most Wonderful Time of the Year. I like...
Let It Snow.
That song's good.
Snow.
Aretha Franklin sings a version of Winter Wonderland.
Yeah,
that is tremendous.
Right.
That's great. Ella Fitzgerald, Sleigh Ride, another
Nat
one.
Nat King Cole.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Chestnuts roasting on an open fire. Yeah. All right. And then obviously...
Don't make me mute your guys' mics up there.
I know.
Aaron Donald nipping at your nose.
But the greatest Christmas song of all time is All I Want for Christmas Is You by Mariah Carey.
That's the greatest of all time?
It's
in your opinion?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because there are so many... Oh, it's so good. I do not get sick of that song. I'll sometimes listen to that song in July.
Yeah, I can't go there with
that. I mean, it's just, it's really good, so.
You cannot play that song in July.
Sometimes you're just like, man, I'm a little down. Like, I just want to hear something to bring me up. And, like, that's a top 10 song in my book. Like, I've got a playlist of, like, all-time faves, I call it,
I would leave you alone completely. If I heard that, like, banging out of your headphones or in your car in July, I would leave you alone.
I'm not going to do
I would call the police on you.
Yeah. I'm not going to do that, like, in the office or, like, if I'm with somebody. That's like, I'm home in my
apartment.
Excuse
me, officer.
I've got a glass of bourbon,
right.
And, like, I need to
officer,
get up a
he's
bit.
Not threatening. He's not doing anything wrong. He's just blasting Mariah Carey Christmas music in July.
Which is kind of weird.
This is his license
it's
plate number.
Weird.
Just keep this on
yeah,
file.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow. All right. So we'll go back to football, and we will end with the single most important thing the Rams have to do to beat the Cardinals this week.
You know, do you like movies? Love Actually?
I've seen that movie. Yeah.
The little girl sings
it at the
end. Oh, my God,
that
is a great... Okay,
yeah,
anyway,
it's a great scene.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. When she turns around and looks at the kid...
That
it
was
going to
be my
me.
Question next
it
week.
It always gets me.
Movies,
anyway, go ahead.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Die Hard. Best Christmas movie of all time.
We talked about this last year.
Die Hard.
You remember?
Best Christmas movie of all time.
Oh, I said I've never seen Die Hard. I've still never seen Die Hard. Anyway, what's the single most important...
We have it on film of him giving you Die Hard, don't we?
I think we... I don't know if we recorded that, but like, yeah, like...
I'm pretty sure you brought
you
it
You still
for
haven't
him.
Seen Die Hard yet?
No.
Anyway, go ahead.
I like Bruce Willis. He's great in
So
Pulp
who
Fiction.
Is Bruce Willis to you?
The guy from Pulp Fiction.
That's Bruce Willis to you?
Kind of, yeah.
Oh, okay. All right.
I like Pulp
Bruce Willis is John McClane.
I like Quentin Tarantino.
Yeah. Who's Matt Damon to you?
Oh, God. What are those movies called? Bourne. Jason Bourne.
Oh, he's Jason Bourne. Okay. Well, Bruce Willis is John McClane.
Sure. No,
okay,
I get
just
that.
Making
like,
sure.
Like,
anyway.
You know, Tom Cruise is the Mission Impossible guy. What's that guy's name?
Ethan Hunt.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Anyway.
Edit all this out. Anyway.
What's the single most important thing the Rams have to do to beat the Cardinals?
Oh, my gosh.
It's a long episode.
Well, this is going to sound funny. Remember that Arizona is your opponent.
Hmm.
And get ready for the next one next week. Get ready for this one now.
Yeah.
Contain Larry Fitzgerald if possible. And Sean McVay said it. He has no weakness. And I agree.
Mm-hmm.
And he just got fined $24,000 for blocking, for a crackback. So, I mean, if you thought that, you know, he wasn't, he's already tough enough to defend, he also blocks.
Yes.
So, yeah, I mean,
that
defend him. Adrian Peterson, you have to show the utmost respect for, because he can put you on SportsCenter. He can put up a 200-yard day at any moment.
And they did show respect for him in the last matchup, and they stuffed him, but they definitely, I thought, showed respect for his ability to
that's
run.
That's how you respect him. And on the other side, offensively, just keep doing what you're doing on offense. Keep finding ways to move the football if they're taking away parts of your offense. Because every defense is going to have to take away something. You can't defend everything, which is what Sean McVay gives you. Yeah. He gives you everything. You're going to have to defend vertically and horizontally. So you're going to have to pick. depending on what you have defensively, we're just going to take this away and live on the rest. So whatever and however Arizona decides to defend you, be ready to counter.
Yeah, McVay does like to say that, you know, you want to attack the width and the depth of the football field. So we'll see if the Rams can do that on Sunday.
And mistakes on special teams.
No mistakes on special teams. We didn't really talk about it, but quick shout out.
Farrell Cooper,
40-yard kick return, 40-yard punt return.
Yes.
The fact that we got through over an hour of this and did not mention that, like, that's my bad probably, but also... Like, I think that shows you just the way this season is going for these Rams, where
you get a
performance like that, and it's almost a footnote.
Right. Farrell Cooper, his returnability, outstanding. Bones Fossil, the setup.
Yeah.
And what he's running to get him into space.
Tremendous
job. Yeah, absolutely.
And Greg Zuerlein continues to make kicks.
Yes.
And Johnny Hecker continues to get punts inside the 20. So there's your special teams minute, I guess, for this episode. Thank you guys so much for tuning in to this episode of Between the Horns. Remember, kickoff from Arizona, 2:25 local time, because they're not always on Pacific time for whatever reason, but it's at 1:25 Pacific. That's going to be on Fox. You can also check out my friend here, DeMarco Farr, JB Long, and Maurice Jones-Drew on ESPN LA with the radio call. So for my producer, Matt, for DeMarco Farr, I'm Miles Simmons. We'll see you next week.